Oh, can you hear me?
Hey, yes, I can.
Perfect.
Sorry, I'm just reading a couple of emails. Welcome, by the way.
You.
Sorry about my not being attentive there.
No, it's perfectly okay.
let's see here. We got David and Jason and Harpreet. Welcome. Okay, this is great. And Harpreet, I saw your email. And I skimmed over it. And so if you want, we can just kind of talk through it.
Okay.
If that's useful. Let's let a few other
Sure.
people join in. David and Jason, are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Great. Good to see you. Hey, were you in Switzerland, was it, David? Oh, you're muted, bud.
I'm still here. We fly out on Friday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
Awesome.
it's a 6 o'clock at night here.
Awesome. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. And what have you guys been doing there?
We went to Zermatt, which is a beautiful ski town in the shadows of Matterhorn, which is
Yeah.
awesome.
Did you ski?
We did not. We had the little ones with us, so it was just logistically wasn't happening. The main event was my brother-in-law's 40th birthday, so we were we had a nice dinner and took this gondola or like this train ride up to the mountain. It was very cool.
That's awesome. I
Yeah,
love
man.
it. I love it. Well,
Thanks.
we are welcoming both Jason and Harpreet, two new members to the group. I got emails from some others that are not able to make it today. So we got a nice small group, which I'm happy about. Harpreet had an email she had sent me. So I'm going to start with her and then we'll get going. So do you want to just kind of outline where you are? I mean, I saw what you were asking, but
Sure.
yeah.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Harpreet Smith, just to give you some background. I'm the director of operations for a clinical facility. So we really do we run clinical trials, right, for pharma companies. So we function kind of like a hospital. We're open 24/7, which puts a lot of strain on the staff. And mostly what I deal with is personnel issues on a daily basis. So I've had a I think this is a recurring problem, which is why I want to know the best way to handle this. I've got a nurse who I recently promoted to a clinic manager position, which is really my right-hand person to run the day-to-day operations of the clinical aspect of what we do. And she's very competent, very driven, ambitious, but when I've observed her, she usually acts very quickly and delegates, but then maybe loses, doesn't follow up. And usually, if there are no consequences, it's not a big deal. I mean, you can't do everything yourself, so we get that. But in the course of the last 2 weeks, we've had two significant events that could have been prevented if she had just followed up or been a little bit more diligent in making sure that things were set up appropriately instead of just leaving it to chance. And so one of them was that, we didn't have someone show up to work, several people not show up to work on time because, COVID also hasn't helped. People have just gotten a laissez-faire attitude about when they show up. And when we're running trials or you're in a healthcare facility, everything has to be, you got to be timely. And then the other thing is, we missed a positive test for a few of our, well, they're not patients, they're healthy trial participants, but we'll just call them patients that should have been addressed. And we missed it, right? And so our client basically has told us, has made her aware of this instead of her catching it, and being able to do something about it. So could it have impacted safety? Yes. Both of these incidents. Luckily, nothing happened. So I want to have a conversation with her to give her the right feedback. I don't want to, I guess I don't want to diminish all the effort that she's put in. I still want this to be an encouraging conversation, but what I'm hoping for at the end of the conversation is a different level of commitment and acknowledgement that she's, you know, how is she going to not make sure not that, that this doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
How do I do that?
Okay. A couple of things I'll suggest. Thanks for the question. So first thing I'm going to suggest is I just need to ask a couple of questions. So you're saying that this is a repeating pattern that you have witnessed in her, not a one-time, two-time thing, but like consistent and repeated pattern?
I would say it happens off and on, right? So this is probably like the third time where there's been a couple of events in succession that have happened.
Okay. And over how many years or months has this?
2 years. 2 years.
So three times over 2 years, and there are mistakes that are oversights, basically, just like a lack of attention to detail kind of thing. Is that what you would say it is, or is it something else?
So they're not. So part of it is that she also wasn't on site when she should have been. So I think that's been corrected because I've made it clear now. So I haven't left it up to her judgment, right? So that might have been my fault that I was hoping she'd get it on her own. And I've made that clear, right? So I'm going to take ownership of that. But the other things are, I just don't think that she's had tight enough control over that. And when you're managing a group and those things are critical, you really have to have some tight ownership. You can't just assume that people are going to be doing things, you know, and it's going to get done.
Okay. So I'm going to recommend that you start watching module 3. And in particular, the videos, I think they're video five and six, maybe six and seven. I can't remember the exact videos, but it'll be clear when I tell you what to watch, where it's basically just the ARISE performance model. So ARISE. And all we're doing there is first checking with yourself. The A is so when people don't perform, there are five reasons people don't perform, and only five reasons. And the first reason is the A, it's the ARISE model, ARISE. A is, have you as a leader done an adequate job making that person aware of what winning looks like? And there's six or seven things that are involved in making someone aware. Have you done the right sequencing? Have you prioritized things for them? Have you confirmed that they share the same understanding that you have? There are ways to do that so that you have confirmation. A simple way to do that is, after this conversation, I'd like you to send me an email detailing what you think the agreement is. And that forces them to have to generate, oh, okay, I got to think through, how did I hear what she said? And then they get sent it to you, and 9 times out of 10, it's not your understanding. And so now you have a way of correcting it. But because they put it in writing, you now have a lot more clarity together. But it's important that they put it in writing, not you, because it forces them to generate. So I mean, those are you'll learn more about that in that video. And I want to give you some of it now. The remaining ARISE, so R is resource. Are they properly resourced? And resourcing can be everything from budgets and all the obvious things. I is, are they inexperienced in some material way? Have they just not been through enough cycles to judge talent or benchmarks or any of those things? That's what inexperience can lead to. S is skills. Do they lack the skills, hard skills necessary to do the work? And then the last one is E, in engagement. Are they going through a divorce? Did their father just die? Are they bored out of their mind? Do they feel that there's politics in the organization that they aren't going to get around? Do they think that you hate them? And that's really the emotional system, that very big part that we've talked about before. So, you know, just looking at that, you could very easily ask yourself, you know, have I, and watch that video, especially the one about the A, and just figure out, have I done an adequate job of making that person aware of where the target is and how I expect you to hit it and which arrows I want you to use and how far away I want you to stand and how many arrows need to hit that target? Have I done that? Or have I not? In which, if I haven't, then it's an easy conversation. Right. Because then it's like, hey, I have not done a very good job of setting clarity around the standards that I expect. And if I were in your shoes, I'd be kind of lost. So I want to apologize, and let me do that now. And at the end of this conversation, I'm going to ask you to email me your understanding of what we've agreed to. And then I'll clarify anything that I think is amiss, and then we'll go from there. And let's get back to work. If you've done all that and you look at it and you're like, I've done this, believe me, Shane, I've done it like a lot. I'm tired of doing it. Then you want to look at those four things. What might be missing there in those four things?
Yeah, I have a feeling it'll be a combination.
And that's great. If it's a combination, it's great. So you're going to start by going, hey, let me start here with the awareness issue. I have not made you well aware. I've not set the standards right. Let me set the record straight. And then the way you have the conversation, and the videos will help you sort through this too, but the way you have the conversation about the other four things are you say, first of all, you hypothesize, you know, so right now, what would you hypothesize of those four things, resourcing, inexperience, skill, or engagement? Which one do you think might be at play? Could be a combination.
It's resources.
Great. So what's the resource that's missing?
She's currently covering for another role that's been vacant for a few months.
Awesome. So yeah. This is actually a very easy conversation then, because it's not personal.
Right.
The only thing that's personal is maybe you haven't made her totally aware. And the second is she's up against some resourcing constraints. And then you just want to press into that a little bit and be like, hey, to what extent did what happened this last week or whatever was a resource constraint for you? To what extent was that just too many things you're carrying and balls got dropped? In which case, that's on me to solve, not just you. Like, we have to solve that together.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a Does that help?
Way. Yeah, yeah, that really helps.
Okay. Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. You bet, of course. Awesome. Okay, we can come back to you in a little bit here, Harpreet. We'll check in with others. Jason, I think you had sent me an email saying you just wanted to kind of hang back a bit. You're welcome to jump in, talk about anything you want. There's nothing that's too personal or too professional. It's okay if you're focused on something that is only going to be concerning for you. People will still get value from anything you bring. So feel free to jump in any way you want. Jason, by the way, everybody, is a lieutenant colonel in the, it's the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania Air National Guard. Yeah.
Yes, that is. That's true. Maintenance group commander. So we got about 404 people, to be exact, underneath two different squadrons, 16 aircraft. And we're the largest tanker wing in the Air National Guard. So a whole bunch of people. But the Air National Guard carries its own flavor from active duty. They're brought up in a different way. We're more of a family hometown feel. We don't move around. We don't go. I'm in uniform. I don't think Shane's seen me outside of uniform, but not. So it's not just one weekend a month. It's all the time. So we are, out of the 404 people I have here, about 100 of them are full-time that we man the base all the time. And a lot of them are 30-year. It's not just a 20-year now, 30-year up to 40-year career. So a lot of my questions revolve around changing culture. I've had to, as Shane says, look at myself first and think maybe I'm just off my own rocker, but I feel that the leadership has failed. We have, Air Force has core values, integrity first, service before self, excellence in all we do. And that's the building block, the foundation that we move on and go. Yet, if I asked about a year ago, ask anybody through here what the core values were, Air Force core values were, we're at about a 25% success rate. So the leaders before me weren't very successful in implementing that for me to even come in and have an understanding and a foundational building to start on. And that's a lot of my frustrations. So I appreciate it, Preet. That's kind of the same thing, that critical feedback. You know, I almost daily have to sit across from somebody and give that kind of feedback. And yeah, you hit kind of the nail on the head when you said, how do I do it without discouraging them? I'm more in your face. I don't want to say I'm rude, but I get to the point pretty quickly. And one thing that has helped, and even helped as of yesterday when I gave him feedback, I said, you have to hold a mirror up. And the people that we have, I'm sure everybody on the call in their organization has some type of performance plan or, you know, 1 through 5 usual rating. You do it at the beginning, the midterm, and the end term, and try and give that feedback. And everyone through here, we grew up saying, hey, to take care of your people, you know, give them everything. And it turned into our performance plans or straight fives. So here I come in and I say, no, 3's met expectations. Nothing's wrong with a 3. That's where you are. And they're just blowing their heads off. They don't know how to accept it. So Of the five I've done lately, three of them have, when I say hold a mirror up, they come back to me the next day and they're like, I didn't get any sleep last night. I really had to think about it. And you're right. But you have to be ready with that feedback to say those expectations that he's saying. I love that acronym, the ARISE. I got to obviously look at it. I didn't go through module three, and it sounds like a great resource to be able to pinpoint where to focus. So I appreciate that. And I do. Those questions are great. So I know I've talked a lot. I try not to, and I'll hang back and see how I can contribute at some point.
Jason, you're doing great. You're not talking too much. This is all part of it. And I'm going to ask questions too. So I'm going to make a few observations. So the first thing I'm going to tell you about culture change is changing culture, change management is pain management. Okay. That's all you're doing. You're managing emotional pain. Nobody wants change. People resist change, even when it's good change. The only change that people endure is change that they initiate. When somebody feels they have agency and power over the change, they are willing to take on the pain. And the reason is because as humans, we are willing to suffer for what we are committed to. So if you are coming in to a culture that has an existing set of goalposts and is playing a particular game, so you come in and you're like, I play football. That's what I do. And they've all been playing golf. And you're like, why aren't you kicking the ball through the post? They're like, I got a stick. What do you mean? The stick is supposed to go in the little hole. They're like, there are no little holes. What's wrong with you? You're getting a three for that. And they're like, what? I'm getting a three the whole time. We were playing golf. Now we're playing football. What are you talking about? And you walk around going, this is obvious. Of course, that's what we're doing, right? So that's the extreme. I'm painting an extreme picture. The reason I want you to hear that is because what you're playing with is the emotional system. And that change, you can actually create easy change when you become attentive to the emotional system. And that's weird in military context because you have about a 1,000-year history of, of command and control that says, go left, you go left, or you're court-martialed or dead, or, you know, any number of things, right? So what you're undertaking is really fresh and different. And the methods I'm going to suggest to you are going to be different, but they're going to be more effective. And so the first thing that you're going to want to do is watch, I think it's video 12 of module one. For sure, watch all of module one. You don't have to do everything in module one, but just start watching the videos in module one. When you get to video 12, that's called staging the ascent. So very briefly, do you know how people climb Everest? Do you know the technical way that in order to ascend to the summit of Everest, when you arrive at base camp, you spend like 6 weeks just at base camp, just to get acclimated. Then from base camp, you ascend to camp one, spend one night, then you go back down to camp two. I mean, back down to base camp. Then you go back up to camp one, spend like three nights, then back down to base camp. Then you go all the way to camp two, then back down to one, then back down to base camp, and then you make the final ascent. So you do that in order to acclimate to higher altitudes because people's brains will swell if they don't do that. So there's this whole method by which you ascend Everest. Well, the exact same thing is true in change management. And I use that metaphor of camps, literally base camp. Camp one is awareness. Camp two is understanding. Camp three is enrollment, ownership, leadership. And once you start to see this is the process by which you have to lead change in an organization, you will find change happens easily. It's only when we don't understand this and we come in and go, I'm the new boss. I've already got everything set. I know what needs to happen. Why aren't people doing the thing that I want them to do? It's because change management is pain management and they're going to resist you. Second thing for you to become aware of is anytime anybody gets a new boss, and I know you're not totally new, but you're still new-ish, the goalposts move and they're not notified of it. And you don't even know you're moving the goalposts because just who you are. So you're like, I don't know what the previous leader was, but I'm this way and you're going to have to get used to me. And so 70% of someone's enjoyment of their work is derived from who their direct manager is. So whenever a direct manager leaves and a new one is replaced, it is literally as if everyone was fired from their jobs and rehired to a job they didn't apply for. And now they're held to standards that they don't know about. So that's what's actually going on. That's where all the sand is in the gears. And so video 12 is going to help you along with module 3, the Arise model, especially the A. That's going to help you so much. And here's an exact way of how. When you watch the Arise videos on module 3 and you focus on the A, and by the way, it's a workbook too, so you can download that if you don't want to watch the videos, but you can download the workbook. You're going to look at the A, and the A is, how do I make them aware of what I expect, what winning looks like, where the target is, all the error, everything that I expect. I can't assume they know anything. I need to assume they know nothing about what I expect. And then you're going to use video 12 of module 1, which is, you're going to stage the ascent for them. You're going to give them a window of time where they're not going to get it right, but they're still going to get fives. And you're going to say, I know that everybody got fives, and I know what that means for all of us and how we feel about our work life. And I want you to know that I'm going to start moving the goalposts, and I do it for these reasons. And I want you to know that 3 is the new 5. If you get a 3, that's the new 5. What that means is, if you're getting a 3 and that's the new 5, you've got 2 levels above that you can perform to. So if you get a 3, walk away feeling proud that you got a 5, just like last time. That's you making them aware of the shift in the goalposts. And what you're doing is, you're playing in the emotional system. You are stepping into all of that stuff. And when you do that, you will stop the what's called collusion. Right now, people may be colluding against you. They may even be doing it unconsciously. It's not even like they're actively trying to, you know, work against you. Just unconsciously, collusion starts when I start to feel like a failure. Like, I don't want to feel like a failure. So I'm going to start blaming this guy. I'm going to start resisting this guy. I'm going to start going end arounds. I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to do it in a way that I have white gloves attached, right? Like, oh, there's no fingerprints. I don't know what you're talking about. And then you're going to be up there just frustrated, pulling your hair out that people aren't doing the thing you want them to do. Okay, so now I've done a lot of talking. So I'm going to pause there and just see how much of that resonates, makes sense, questions, pushback.
So, and I know it makes sense. Where I get to is, how can you reach 400 people then? So while you're trying to do that with my top 5, my direct reports, we're working on it. So I've been in the spot for 1.5 years and I'm working on them. But meanwhile, the other 5 layers below them are still functioning the old way, because I'm still training the 5 direct reports, and some are getting it, some aren't getting it. So some are getting the idea, some aren't. Or the other side is, and I just had it today, you know, yesterday, she said, well, if we're being held to this 3 standard, but the other 4 groups are getting Santa Claus is rating them and giving them straight 5s. Well, that's coming out of our bonus, and you're not taking care of your people. I get it, but this group is mine. And unfortunately, you belong to me, and this is the standard that we have. So how do you get them to still, I don't know, value your new path if the rest of the organization is upside down, in your opinion?
So now you've added a layer of complexity that I appreciate. First thing I'll say is, I hadn't occurred to me that you have competing divisions that are leading and managing and assigning awards differently than you. And so I want you to know that long-term, your first task should be to get continuity and consistency across your peer groups. If you can't, you will become the hated leader. You will not be thanked for this. So if you want to stand on this ideology, know that you will suffer greatly for it. And that's not what I want for you. I'm just telling you, I didn't realize you had others that were basically giving out, you know, cookies. If that's the case, then you've got to start your base camp on this summit. And by the way, the other reason I want you to know this is a big, long journey, and Everest is not an easy hike, is change management takes time. So you've got to elongate your timeline considerably, especially when you have 400. How many layers do you have? 5 layers, 5 levels?
Through my group, about 5.
5 levels. Okay, good. So this is also in the video, but know this. You cannot get anybody else below your next level to a camp that they haven't been to. So let me explain what I mean by that. You first have to get your lieutenants, not literal lieutenants, your next level down. Two, understanding. That's camp two on my enrollment process before you get everybody else to camp one. And here's why. And that has to happen all the way through the system. So what you have to do is map out, quite literally, this meeting we're about to have is the understanding meeting. It's camp two meeting. And I'm meeting with my top people and I literally show people in a change management process. I show them the graphic. There's a graphic with Everest and the camps. And I'll say, we're now at camp two today. I'm not trying to get you to camp three. That's not our purpose. Our purpose is camp two. And by the way, I need you at camp two because next week we're having a meeting with your direct reports and they need to be at camp one. And we can't get them to camp one if you're not at camp two. And here's the beautiful thing about this whole change management. Camps one and two are awareness and understanding, not enrollment. Now, why do I stage those two camps before enrollment? The reason is because change happens easier when people feel that they have agency, that they have control. Camps one and two give them the feeling of control. And here's an example. Jason, a change is coming. And all I want you to know is that a change is coming. And this is what the change is going to look like. You don't have to care about it right now. You don't have to agree with it. You don't even have to understand it. I only want you to know that it's coming. Done. Next meeting we have. Hey, Jason, we're now at camp two. This is understanding. Guess what? You still don't have to care about this. You still don't have to agree with it. But I really want you to understand it. I don't want you to skip this stage. I don't want you to rush into, yes, we're doing it, until you really understand what I'm asking for. Ask all the questions you need to ask. But believe me, it's okay if you think this is stupid. It's okay if you hate it. We're at that stage now. We're going to have those kinds of conversations. You can even express the fact that you think this is stupid. You can even talk about how you don't care about any of this. But we're going to walk out of here with an understanding. The next meeting, hey, guess what? You've now had time to process. You've now had time to ask questions. You've now had time to all these things. Today is the day I'm asking you to enroll. This is camp three. And enrollment is you say yes to this idea. Now, I know that you have the authority to tell them they're going to say yes no matter what. But what I've just done is I've staged the conversation in such a way that you've allowed them to come along with their own emotional intensity. And then they can bring it to enrollment. Now, when you say, hey, guys, camp three, that is the goal. If we reach camp three, we win. If people choose to enroll and say, I'm a part of what you're doing, you're winning. But guess what? There's two camps beyond it that are the gravy. So my expectation is camp three. But for the rare few who choose it, not because I need you to, but because you care about it for yourself, camp four is ownership and camp five is leadership. Camp four is, that's not just yours anymore, Jason, it's mine. I like this. I want this. I believe in this. Camp five is, hey, Jason, it's not just mine anymore. I'm innovating it. I'm taking it to new levels. I'm leading this process. I mean, I'm injecting new, more powerful ideas into the system and bringing it to another level. Those two camps are unnecessary for really thriving organizations. But boy, are they nice to have when you have high achieving people. And so, you know, this comes back now to human motivation. And I'm sorry if the others, I want to spend a little extra time on this. I think it's legitimate for everybody who's on this call. So I hope you hear, you know, this isn't just for Jason. When it comes to human motivation, one of the things that we've found in research is that if you were like, there was a leader that I worked with who bonused his people only if they got 100% on their performance evaluations. So you'd get a percentage of a bonus, 100% bonus if you were at the top, right? But if you got a 4 or a 3, you'd get 70% and then 50% of your bonus. What he found was everybody was all up in arms and worked up, and he was having a hard time keeping people. There was a lot of attrition in his company. So what we did is we changed the frames. We did not change the amounts. We changed the frames for everybody coming in. He reset all the expectations. What he said was, if you reach a level 3, you get 100% of your bonus. If you reach a level 4, you get 120% of your bonus. If you reach a level 5, you get 150% of your bonus. The amounts of money did not change. The framing did. And people loved it. Because who doesn't want to walk around going, I got 150% on the test, right? People aren't motivated by like, you're a failure, keep working harder. Nope, you're still a failure, keep working harder. People are motivated by, you did really well, that's solid work, 100%. If you want to go for the gravy or if you want to get some icing, there's even more you can do. Are you interested in the icing? They're like, yeah, I love icing. But if you walk around going, nope, you're still a failure. Nope, that's still not good enough. There's a very, very small percentage of people that are motivated that way. They do exist, and you might be one of them, but they're a small percentage. And I'll guarantee you that the more millennials that come into your world, the less and less they're going to be motivated by that stuff. Okay, so I'm going to pause now. I'm going to let everybody interact with what I just said, but I'm going to first ask Jason your comments.
I'm impressed that you can pick up. That's why I held back on some emails on some. They feel complex, right? The buildup of the scenarios and gives high motivation. You're on target and has made me realize I got to step up to the other colonels sitting at the table and say either you guys are on board or not. And I got to see if my wing commander is first, if he's going to back me. And he paid for the class. So here, boss, this is where we need to go.
So let's talk about that for just a minute, because everybody has to have the same frame, which means the way that you would present it is, I would like to recalibrate our scale so that 3 is the new 5. And I'd like everybody in the system to understand that if you get a 3, it is like getting a 5. And you would give that to people, but I want to make sure that there are levels beyond the 5. So the people that are really motivated to push beyond and go the extra mile and do the thing above, we don't have a thing above. So I'd like to enroll everybody in this process. And if you can't get them enrolled, I think it's a mistake to try to do it in your system. I think you're going to hurt yourself.
Well, and that's where we are. That's the confusion and the anger coming back at me.
Yep. And people, and because here's the deal, you're playing with paychecks. You're not just playing with egos. And that is a very serious thing. So you want to be really, really careful that, this is your ideology that we're talking with. And that's why I want you to be really careful, because you're going to be viewed and hated. And once you're hated, people won't want to follow you. And then it's collusion. So I'm really concerned that you get everybody on board and that you get the frames right. The worst thing you can do is be the guy who convinced everybody else to lower everybody's bonuses. So that would be a huge mistake too. So that's why you'd want to calibrate and say, look, if you get a 3, you get a, we're going to call it a full bonus at 3 or a full whatever. And then we're going to call it a 120% and 150% if you get 5s. And that way people are aware, oh, I've been receiving 100% of what I was entitled to. Now, whatever numbers you guys have to play with in order to make that real, I don't want you lying about it, but I do. You may have to adjust some things in order for that to be real. But I'm just letting you know that's the map that's going to work for you if you can get them enrolled in it.
I understand.
So I had a similar conversation. Probably didn't go well now that I'm reflecting on what you've said. So I had an employee catch me in the hallway yesterday. So they're about 3 levels down, mm-hmm. right? But they saw me in the hallway and I've been at this organization for 20 years, so they know me. And so she took the opportunity to come and talk to me, and we had just issued out the letters for all their pay raises for this year. And we've had an average increase of 5%, which isn't bad given the inflation and everything. But for her, I don't know what was not resonating for her, but she basically, her initial statement to me was, I want you to explain this to me. So she pulls out her letter, right? I said, what do you want me to explain? So what are you having trouble understanding, right? And so she says, well, I don't understand why, you know, my current rate is X, and she's an hourly employee, and my, now you're saying my new rate is this, and is that all I'm worth, right? And so she says, this doesn't really show me that you appreciate me. And I've been, you know, catching mistakes. We've been shorthanded and I've been doing this. And you know what? If this is what you're going to do, then I don't have to do any of that anymore. I can change my attitude. I don't respond to people really well when that happens, right? So my initial, I had to really stay quiet and I just let her speak. But then she just wouldn't stop like saying that. And I said to myself, like, I said, well, what do you think your job is? Right? Do you think that catching mistakes and helping others is not part of your job? Clearly that conversation did not go well. So she basically said, you know, well, you don't appreciate that, right? So she kept going back to that. I don't appreciate it. And I think I was just in a, I said, I do appreciate everything that you've done. We've worked together for a very long time. I said, I'm not quite sure that you understand what the raise is. So I would ask that you go back to your manager or to HR and make sure that you understand what this is saying before we continue. And I really do think you enjoy helping people. I just think when you're saying it, it's coming out like you want, you're going to change your attitude. And so then she started apologizing that she skipped her manager and came to me and, you know, all this stuff. I said, there's no need to apologize. I have an open door policy. You can come and see me. I just think you need to have that basic understanding. So I went back to the managers, and I think, you know, similar to what Jason has expressed, is I'm saying something to my managers, right? But are they saying the same thing back? So how do you make sure that the communication that you're giving is the same conversation and communication that they're having a level down?
Similar to the way that I, first of all, I appreciate that it's a hard conversation to have, and finance and money and all that. And I'm saying a lot of things in generalities, right? Like give people 100% of the bonus, even if they hit three, there are going to be some entitled people out there who need to be held to account. So I'm not saying that should not, I'm just saying as a general policy, if people show up and do their job, like I give this much of my life to this organization, and I'm doing the job according to what you've asked me to do, of course you should get 100% of the things you did. It's for people who do this really extra stuff that you should give a little bit extra. And I think you should. Whether it's literally more money or whether it's just framed as a percentage higher is fine with me. That's about the motivation. And so anyway, just want to flag that for you. It's possible this person feels a little bit entitled and, you know, they've got a little strings attached to the way they give, right? So they're like, I'm giving, look, I'm giving, no, where's my money? You're like, well, it wasn't really our agreement, but okay. So I appreciate that. But your question was, how do I make sure that the message I'm giving is given again? One of the ways is it depends on what's happening. It depends on if you're changing something or if you're just relaying something that is regular information that gets relayed. So if something is changing, then it's the staging the ascent process. Now that staging the ascent doesn't have to be a year. It can be 2 weeks. But what you're doing is you're saying first, do my managers understand this before they run off and talk about it? Do they really have the same understanding I have? Then what you can do is you can say, I want you to email me what your message is to your team. Before you give it to your team, send me what you plan to say. And then you use that to correct it. And there's a weird thing that happens when people commit what they want to say to writing, even though they don't want to do that. It generates something in them and it builds their understanding. And then when you correct it and you amend it, that is much more powerful than if you just did it verbally. You start verbally. You say, this is what I want to happen. This is what I think the message should be. I know each of you are different. You have different team members. So what would help me is if you could just send me a quick email with how you plan to frame it to your team.
Very well said. Yes.
That's the best way to ensure that it's a consistent message, in my experience. Others are welcome to weigh in. If you have other ideas, feel free to weigh in.
I think the other part of that that is often tricky is there needs to be the buy-in, because if there's not, then the message gets relayed and the ultimate is, oh, did I roll my eyes out loud? And you have to be aware of that and make sure that that's not the message that that lair is giving. You know, here's what they told me to do. I'm really sorry. You know, that can't be the message. So you have to have that buy-in for sure.
And that's why when you do the staging the ascent process, Susan, that's exactly right. You have to cascade each camp. Because the worst thing that can happen is what Susan just said, which is they go, why are we making this change? And the manager goes, I don't know. They just told me about it. That's death. That's they're colluding against you in that moment. So that and it's not their fault because they weren't told either. So they're just like, I have no idea. So that's why it's so critical. They're like, yes, I know what's happening. And yes, I understand what's happening. And that's why we're having this conversation. And I know it's hard, but there's room for you to disagree and think about it, just like there was room for me to disagree and think about it. But this is the path we're on.
So that clarity with her manager is something that needs some attention, maybe. Or maybe, you know, I thought I got it all across to everyone, and maybe I haven't. Maybe it didn't get, the message wasn't clear.
Right.
And I would say in general, if you are getting step skipping, like you've got an open door policy and you got people taking advantage of that, there is something not right with the direct manager.
Yeah.
That's actually the real problem. When you have a really good working relationship with your direct manager, there's no need to skip steps. The desire is to go through that manager because you feel heard, understood, well-led, connected, supported, and you feel that that person's going to do an even better job than you advocating for you on your behalf. So when you're stepping around someone, that means I don't really trust the person that I'm working for. And so that's where you want to just, you want to use that as a good indicator. Like, wow, this person, I keep getting step skips. I'm going to check in with them and be like, hey, I'm getting a lot of step skips. What do you think's going on? You know, that's a kind of a canary in the coal mine that I want to work with you on.
It's a very good point.
Good stuff. All right. Who would like to go next?
We can continue along that theme, yeah. In that I have been doing some interviewing, as you know, for a new person. Thank you very much for the questions. It went really well. We had several individuals come in, and having a consistency of what we wanted to ask them gave us a much clearer picture of who, what the differences were, where the strengths and the weaknesses were, as far as what we needed in that individual. And that's worked out really well. But I think the follow-on from that is all of this. So when someone's coming in and they're taking on a senior role, how do you give them the best opportunity to be successful at that? And to have everyone who doesn't necessarily have the choice of who's coming in and who is going to be their leader, to make sure that everybody feels the benefit of that and sees the opportunity in the whole situation. So this is obviously the lead on from there. So they've been made aware, and then the next steps that go along the way there.
And then I would say, Susan, for you, it'd be good for you to review the first 90 days bonus.
Yeah.
First 90 days success plan, because while that's written and or kind of designed for somebody who is occupying a new role, you would do them a huge favor just to kind of give them a map for those first 90 days. So this is what I want you to be doing. It's what I want you to focus on. This is a tool I want you to use. This is a, you know, just to give them that would be super helpful.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So all the conversations are good, regardless where you are in the journey or how it all works. Everything along the way is, yeah, that could work for this or this could work for that. Even if it's somebody that's getting promoted from within or something's changing along the way. So all good stuff.
Absolutely. Good. Awesome. Well, keep me posted on how that interview is going and all that fun stuff. We can come back in a minute. David, let's check in with you. How are you doing, man? I think when we last talked, you were about to roll out the new structure to everybody for your organization. And there was one guy who was out with COVID and you were kind of debating how to handle that. I think our steer to you was to proceed and let him know. How did that all unfold, or did it unfold?
That's good memory. It feels like a long time ago, right? But we were successful in, again, that camp one, right? Everyone's aware that this is happening. You know, this, as far as that base camp, that's been, you know, kind of a conversation for many months of, you know, we know that we're struggling with growth and everyone's saying we need more people, right? So everyone understands, okay, so needing more people doesn't mean the same, you know, linear growth that, you know, we've always taken on, which is just, okay, just throw more resources at the same problems. It's now the idea of like introducing, yes, we're going to bring on more people, but we need leadership, and having layers in the organization is going to be important moving into the next chapter. And so that awareness, I should say that kind of idea of or initiative has been something, you know, probably for the past like year. So yeah. Now, so camp one awareness, I was able to catch this guy because I actually did a little bit of an isolation before we took the trip as well, just because we had to pass a COVID test in order to get into the country. And he was very receptive to it. I knew he was also kind of my final boss, so to speak, because mm-hmm. he's been at the company the longest. He's the most senior in his role, which again, more of a technical role where he's not the best with people. So kind of coaching him into, you know, the idea that he would have some people that he was going to be responsible for. He reacted as expected, you know, was okay. Well, you know, we'll talk more about it when you get back from your trip, but he wasn't like, you know, don't bother me with this. So that was great. Everyone else was very excited. They're all people that are, you know, driven. They want to, you know, exceed in their, or, you know, kind of that upward mobility. They're looking for that. So this, you know, going to camp two is kind of the plan for when we get back. And one of the questions I had coming into the training today was, you know, in terms of proper sequence, you know, understanding that like visions, values, strategy, and structure, I've just spent all this time, in, you know, doing that whole, you know, structure game. However, you know, because it wasn't all a team effort to create that structure, kind of coming back to, you know, because it seems to me that that's the logical order is to, you know, create vision, then value, then strategy, then structure. But now that, okay, well, at least we have this general structure, going back to vision and values is kind of where I was thinking to start when we bring the, you know, the quote unquote leadership team together. Yes. You know, this first meeting being a very broad strategy. It's not a, I should say, it's not a tactical meeting like you refer to. It's more of a just, hey, this is, you know, these are the faces that are going to be, you know, here each week. These are some of the topics. And then kind of starting with that whole vision and values, I wanted to hit those right away in the first like one or two meetings is like, hey guys, like let's think about our company vision and values. And then let's also think about each team's like core values. So for instance, like for selling, you know, we're in a very consultative sales, you know, culture. We're not, you know, that used car, like, you know, make a deal just to make a deal. It's that we're more, you know, begin with the end in mind, pull rather than push. So like working with the sales director to create those, all right, let's do this together, right? Let's create a core values that when we bring on these three salespeople this spring, what are we going to tell them is our, you know, company culture and what are our values? So I think that starting it at the company level is going to be a good place for it as a team, and then just making time for each individual, like having those weekly check-ins to say, you know, where are we in, you know, creating that, because at the end of the day, it's going to end in a document, right? That we would then use to train people and onboard people.
Yeah.
So I think it's that, what should I expect in terms of, again, I only have five directors. There's going to be, you know, six people total, including myself in this meeting. What are some of your recommendations for making sure that, you know, there's general excitement about this, and keeping that flame stoked, right? Like keep feeding that fire, but also like making sure that it's an actual productive hour or 90 minutes. And then also that when people leave it and we come back around to it, there's that, oh, you did your homework, right? So you know, that accountability factor of like, we're not just meeting to meet, you know, because that's how a lot of our you know, company-wide meetings would go, is that like we're just meeting to meet, right? You know, we'd have these showroom meetings and people would ramble about some of the problems, but there's no real structure to it. So now that we're heading into, you know, this year, I guess my, you know, going back to my first question is like, what are some of the things I should expect and some recommendations you would have for these initial, you know, strategic meetings and then moving into the tactical?
Yeah. So a couple of things. Make sure you take a look at module one fully now. That module one is all about vision and values, not just how to articulate them, but how to pull them through a system, what tools, rituals, and processes need to be in place for those values to live. But the bigger issue also is, I want to make a distinction between what you said, which are core values, and what I would call sales competencies or sales architecture or sales philosophy. Those are different things. And so it's important that you create distinctions to say you're not creating new values. Values are the things that need to extend across the organization, independent of a role, independent of a function. It's just, this is the agreement we form with one another and what we can expect of each other in terms of our behavior. That's what values are. So for example, I consulted with a company, they were a big financial institution, and one of their values was something like, we make smart, prudent, and risk-adjusted investments, something like that. And I was like, great, so I'm an accountant, or I'm in HR, or I'm in marketing. How am I going to live out this value of prudent investments? That's not a value. That's a function of one part of your business. And so how you guys function is a competency, or a philosophy, or a process that you're going to put in place to achieve business. Excellence and integrity, that transcends every single department, function, and whatever, right? So watch that module, because it'll help you begin to think through, how do I articulate these values? But after I've got values listed, how do I get them lived? I mean, that, you know, the values are very important. I think they're huge. And here's why. Because there's an above the line and below the line in every organization. And what I mean by below the line is the underneath the water that you can't see. There are values and culture operating that are underneath the surface of the water. And then there's values above that are the stated values. And the more you can get everything above the water, the better it is for everybody, because the better everybody functions. So I'll give you a classic example. There was an organization whose stated values were disruptive thinking, radical execution, and inventive something. It was all kind of, they were a consulting company that helped reinvent tech companies. So everything was disruptive and radical, and cut through thinking was another phrase. So they had all these kind of above the line posted on the walls. When a leader came in and began to execute on all those values, within 6 months, he had lost all credibility and he was being exited. And they asked me to come in to help figure out why the president didn't make it. And I interviewed everybody on the team. What their real values were not written on the walls, but they were things like, everybody's opinion matters, especially mine. That's value one. Value two is, if you say no to me when I invite you to go to get a drink, I don't trust you anymore. Value three is that you can start to see how, like, the reality of the company and the organization was completely different from what was stated on the wall. Because if what your company really valued were those things, he would have been rewarded for all those things, because he did the things that were on the wall. So module one is a way to help you get as much as you can under the water, above the water, and help you figure out how to make sure that Values and culture are simply behaviors. That's all they are. They're not abstract, complex, amorphous thing. They're simply behaviors we expect of each other. And so, for example, if one of your values is curiosity, great. What are the behaviors that express curiosity? List those. Curiosity is we aren't afraid to make mistakes. We take risks. Or is curiosity just we're endlessly asking new questions? Those are very different expressions of curiosity, right? So getting clear behaviors is going to help you a lot. So anyway, I just want to make sure you have some familiarity as you're starting to go through vision and values with them, that you know how to make sure you're designing really good ones. And then when you have a conversation about sales, you can say, oh, this is a sales competency conversation. And it's not necessarily something that all of us have to think about. It's something that this team has to get really smart at. And we want that sales culture to be informed by the values, but we might have to create new articulations that are more than the values in order to create proper accountabilities. So right. I just want to frame that for you. And then the second thing I want to talk about is if you haven't already, module 4, the how to have better meetings. Have you watched that already?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That is going to be your weekly blueprint for how to run those meetings, because you get much more engagement, much more accountability, much more productivity.
That's very helpful. And it's good to stand back and look at the company first and know what those like shared values are. And then you had mentioned something about like for that one company where they thought they were operating under one set of values, but they were actually, the reality was different. How do you create that change? It's kind of like a, looking through the right lens and actually seeing yourself for how you actually are as a company. Because clearly we could all, say we have these high values, but if they're not lived out in the day to day. And so I really like the idea. So it went to boil it down. It's just you state the value and then you correlate the behavior. And then it's that's for each individual where the team stuff comes in, right? Is the behaviors.
In general, what I would do is I don't do more than 4 values usually. I think after 4, people lose contact with the 4 values. Then you create at least 3 to 4 behaviors under each value, which means you can cover 20 values, because you're further refining. But the intellectual ability to understand is made easier when you have only 4 parents to worry about. And then you have these little things underneath. But the other thing I would suggest for you is, I think you need longer than an hour meeting. I think this is your first meeting with your senior team. I would suggest you do a half day offsite if you can. If you can afford to get time, half day offsite. And what I would do is don't try to get a lot done. Try to start having the right conversations. So great example of that would be do an exercise where you go, okay, when it comes to vision and values, there's stuff below the line and stuff above the line. It's the stuff we say we do and it's the stuff we actually do. And every organization is like that. And I think it's a mistake for us to pretend that doesn't happen here. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to go up to the board. I'm going to draw a line. And for a minute, for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I want you guys to sit down and write down what you think the culture really is based on what the behaviors are already. Not what we hope they are, not what we aspire to, what we really are. Good and bad, warts and all. If there's good, great. If there's bad, great. Doesn't matter to me, no judgment. I just want to surface what you've been seeing. And then you have them go up and write or paste a post-it note. That's a really good exercise, the post-it notes. Everybody gets a set of post-it notes and you write down, here's one value, here's another behavior, here's another thing. And you go up and you start pasting them on the wall below the line. And you write the values above the line. Those are the ones that you already agreed to. So those are written on the board. Then you go below the line and you go, what's below? And then what you do is you start clustering them. So you start going, okay, well, these kind of seem to be a value over here. And these seem to be a value over here. So one of the values might be like, it's okay to be late to meetings. That's a value of this company. It's okay to be late to meetings. Great. Let's cluster that value so we know it's a value. Now we want to ask ourselves, okay, which of these do we know aren't going to serve us going into the future? Which values do we know we need to release in order to go into the future? Which of these values are not listed above the line, but are really important resources for us that we need to hold on to, and we need to start encouraging and naming and rewarding? What would happen if we promoted that above the line? And then you go, and now we have that. So you've identified, like, here are the values that we really don't want to take into the future. And here are the values that we know we want to take into the future. And then the last question is, what values are not listed here that we are going to need to reach into the future and pull back to us? You know, is creativity missing and we think we're going to have to get really creative? Or is it who knows what, right? But those are the three categories. And all you're doing is, and again, it sounds weird, but these little tiny mechanics matter a lot. Like the post-it notes, putting them on the board, letting you rearrange them, letting people stand up, move around, actually engage with the values. What happens is you're starting to co-create the values. Once you co-create the values, they have ownership. It's not being done to them. They did it with you. And that goes back to my comment with Jason early on, which is change is easier when people feel they had agency. So I'd spend like quite a bit of time working on that. I'd spend some time doing storytelling. I'd spend some time just, and by the way, all of this is guided in the How to Find Your Group Why in the module one. So there are the prompts and questions that you can ask. So for example, can you think of a time, a memory, an experience in the company's history where we really were at our best? Tell me a time when we were at a story. And then people start telling stories. They're like, so sit down and reflect and write it down and then do story time. And just have people going, well, there's this one time Jeff and I, we stayed up way past midnight. It was crazy. We were totally delirious, but we got this project done. We delivered the client on time. It was hilarious because Jeff said this. And I thought that was crazy. And that's been kind of our inside joke and blah, blah, blah. And you start to humanize everything. And what you're doing there is you're not focused on problems. You're focused on resources, strengths, your power, your superpower. And people start feeling really proud to be a part of that team. Because you're going to spend the rest of your life working on problems and solving problems. But this is a chance for you to bond, to tell stories, to imagine better futures, to be honest and playful about your shadow. Like have some levity about, like, yeah, we can be late to meetings. That should be one of our values written on our wall. That's absurd. I can't believe we have that as a value. We shouldn't have that value. Okay, good. Yeah, we all agree. Great. How are we going to help? How are we going to get rid of that value? And so what you're going to find is you're going to find tons of energy in that room. And that's all you're wanting. You're just wanting, and again, this is about emotional system. You're just playing with energy. You're generating energy. You're getting people up. You're getting people ready. You're getting people excited. And then when they go out, then they hit the business. And business is basically just meeting to talk about problems. And problems just drain you. Over time, you're just like, more problems. Got to handle that problem. Got to handle that. Okay, so I'll pause there for a minute. I know that's a lot.
Oh, I like it. And one thing that I thought of while you're talking is there are some people who could probably we would benefit having in the room, although they're not on that director level team. Is there any does this also make sense for some sort of, you know, different all right, maybe generating our values isn't exclusive to the leadership team. You know,
oh my gosh. If you have the option, bring the whole company together to do this. So what I would use the time with your team is not to get agreements, but just to surface the conversation and tell the stories and have them have this experience. And then what you do, because I've run this for a company of 50-100 people, where we will get people in groups and they will tell the stories and they'll generate the stories and they'll tell them to the whole groups and they'll report out. And it ends up being just a phenomenal day. People walk away just feeling so happy to be a part of the company. And what you're doing is there's a whole training on how to run that meeting. So what I would say is you would use your half day meeting with your leadership team to bond, give them a taste of that experience. And then you present the idea to say, I'd like for us to go out and generate values with everybody. Now, the way that works is you do a full day or a half day, whatever you want to do. Full day is better if you can afford it. And you generate all the stories and all the ideas and all the information. And then the leadership team goes back into private session and goes, we're picking this, 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 and this. And then you go back to the team company and you go, this is what we heard. And this is how we organized what we heard. And now the whole company is like, I was a part of that. Even if my value didn't get listed, I know you heard me because I saw it on the board. And I understand, and you set the expectation, hey, not everybody's value is going to get represented here, but we're going to do our best to try to create the values that reflect you as a company. So that's an amazing exercise that is transformational for organizations.
Well, and that's the level that we're at right now, because we've never done that kind of all hands, collaborative session. Like, we've done some of the kind of Myers-Briggs-esque stuff, but like that gets, a little bit, it's fun. Everybody enjoyed it. But I think this, in terms of, this is like that stake in the ground of like, yes, the dawning of a new chapter, and you guys are all part of this. For the legacy employees, thank you for like allowing us even the opportunity to have this day. And for the new employees, like, thanks for
shaping the future.
Your interest in taking this, and then now we're going to go to the summit together. So that's a great extra.
And in general, the way I would frame it then, in the large group, I think you need to do the shadow work in the small group. So what are the values that we kind of know are here that we wish weren't, or are there any, do that in the large group. You should absolutely say what we're after today. And you do it in two sections. First section is, what are the values that are already active that we want to carry into the future? And we're only going to get to carry two. So generate all the ideas that you want, have all the conversations you need to have, tell all the stories you need to tell. What are the ones we want to carry into the future? And then the second set are, what are the values that don't yet exist here that we know we're going to need based on what we see happening? And in order to do that, you've got to do a little bit of a presentation at the front end that says, here's how the world's changing. Here's how our industry is changing. Here's how, what I think when I look out over the next 10 years, this is what I think we're going to be encountering. This is what I think our challenges are going to be. Then you say, okay, with that backdrop and context, what new values do we need to activate and bring forward? Two. You only get two.
I think the other thing that happens is you have to be willing to understand that not everyone's going to know what you're talking about. What do you mean by values? I'm confused. So making sure that there's some example that goes, because that's what I've run into, is that, we have the benefit of sitting and having a conversation with Shane and looking at module one and understanding the meetings and all of that. The rest of them are out there doing whatever their job is on a daily basis. And these things don't come into it. We see a need for it, but they don't necessarily know that it even exists within the company.
Yep. And I've had people actually take one of my videos and show it to the entire group. Like, if I can't be there, if I'm there, I do a presentation, like a little, here's what values are, here's what they're not, here's how they function, here's why we do this, here's why they matter, here's what the output could look like, here's a story of why that's important. So I do that. I've actually had somebody just take one of my videos and have people watch the video and be like, this is what we're going to be doing. This is how we're going to be thinking together. And then we do the exercise. So thank you for that, Susan. That's great. Great input.
My follow-up question to all this timeline, like, to, in order to keep it potent and to keep things, keep the momentum up, you have that first meeting and then what's that timeline look like for you?
Yeah. So there's kind of two, you're going to be on parallel paths. You're going to be on one path, which is we got to get a bunch of work done and we got to get clear on our accountabilities and our RACI charts and our tactics and all that stuff. So you're going to have a kickoff meeting, which is the half day offsite where you're just thinking big thoughts, dreaming, telling stories, having a good time. Some part of that meeting, you're going to be setting the agenda to say, this is how meetings are going to go. This is meeting cadence. This is what I expect of you when we come to those meetings. Those meetings are going to start on this date. And then just start having those meetings. And you're going to explain, you're going to like teach them about the meeting protocol. And you're going to teach them about, we're going to have different kinds of meetings. We're going to have tactical meetings, which happen every week. And then we're going to have strategic meetings, and they're going to happen every quarter or every 6 months. And they're going to be very different, and they're going to be run differently. And we're going to manage our conversations based on what's tactical and what's strategic. And we're going to make use of a strategic parking lot. We're going to make use of action items and all that fun stuff. So I would say that that first meeting is really bonding, connecting, but not just like trust falls, like bonding around the company itself. You know, I think sometimes people say, oh, we need to go out and bond. We need to do some bungee jumping or whatever. It's fine. I think it's great. But the real transformational stuff in organizational life is when you bond around the beautiful things that the company is and the great stories of making a contribution in the world, not just making money, but like how you created value for other people. So module one will help you with a lot of this. And then any other questions you have, let me know. But what I'd say is that first meeting you have, you set the agenda to say, we need to have a larger company meeting. It's going to be a full day and it's going to be an offsite or whatever. That could be 2 months from now. I don't know what your life is like. I don't know what your company rhythm is, but that is less urgent. It is very important. But you want to make sure that you're ready for it. That's the main thing.
Very good. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, other thoughts? Other people want to ask questions? Interact with anything that's already been said. Push back.
This has been a great first meeting for me.
I'm so glad you joined.
I haven't even watched the modules yet, and I'm super excited.
Good. I think you'll get some value. I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
I really am. I knew when I talked to you the first time, I was really excited to have you join because I think there's a lot of fun stuff we can do. Same for you, Jason. I think there's a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it. So kind of the fire hose effect, right? So how do you, and I'm sure the modules go through and everything else, but at some point, I'm sure many feel overwhelmed at some point, yes. Right? Did I already screw up the organization to get it back on track? Where do you start? How do you put it back in the bag? How do you reset?
Great question.
Just keep going, keep chugging and trudging, keep learning, and it'll present itself at some point.
I would say the first thing to do is go easy on yourself. There is an incredible resilience to organizations and people. I don't think go too hard on yourself at all. I think the next step for you is process what you're learning and pick like one or two things. You know, I gave you a lot of things, and pick one or two things. Like even right now, just say to me, what do you think the one or two things were that you took away from this conversation? I know it's overwhelming, so you don't have to know all of it. You don't have to remember all of it. It takes time for this stuff to happen. Don't worry about that. What are the one or two things that you feel like, boy, that landed and I need to really think about that? I need to work on that.
Mine is get the groups in order. I mean, as I was focused in the wrong direction, I'm in my house, in my group, pushing down. And I need to start either at the peer level or above and make sure we're on the same path. And if that's, I don't know what to do if they don't value what I have to say or where we're trying to go.
Yeah, I think that's the right answer. And I think, guess what? You're going to have to use the same staging the ascent. So here's my suggestion. Just keep it simple for you. I'd like you to watch video 12 of module one. That's your first piece of homework assignment. Then I'd like you to watch the managing up bonus. Those are the two things that you need to do at this moment. Then I believe your next step is having an honest conversation with it's a wing commander. Is that the guy above you?
Yes, sir.
So once you have those two modules in place, just know that your wing commander is going to go through the same journey of awareness, understanding, and enrollment. And you're going to use the managing up module and language patterns to help you begin that. Now, you don't have to do that this week. Like, as far as I'm concerned, just consume the modules that I just suggested, the video and the stage in the ascent. And then next week, you and I are going to strategize about how you're going to have the wing commander conversation. because that's the first conversation you're going to have. And the way we're going to do that is I want you to consume the modules, let what we just talked about here settle in you. And then next week, I want you to come to me with kind of your proposal on, hey, Shane, I think based on what I'm seeing, what I've consumed, this is how I'd like to approach my wing commander. This is what I'd like to say to him. And then we're going to workshop that conversation. Then you're going to have that conversation and we'll see how it went. So the big thing I want you to know is elongate your timeline. This is a slow burn. The second thing I'm going to suggest you consider is you might want to talk to your lieutenants, not literal lieutenants. I don't know what they're called. What is their title?
Just my junior officers.
Junior officers. You want to talk to your junior officers and you might need to explore, like, are you on the eve of needing to rate a bunch of people and give everybody threes and hurt their bonuses? Or did that already happen a while ago?
That'll be April.
Okay. So you've got some time before you have to pull back the reins if that's coming. So here's what I believe you're looking at. If between now and April, you are unsuccessful in getting your wing commander and your chiefs enrolled in a new vision, then my suggestion is you're going to need to enroll in their vision. You're going to need to be a part. You're going to have to swallow hard and find other ways. There are other ways, by the way. We will work to find other ways to get what you're after. You just picked one of the buttons. There are 20 other buttons we can push. And so it may be necessary for you not to push that button and reset expectations and say, hey, I've been, you know, corrected based on my team and I'm supporting this new approach and whatever is fine. We'll work that out down the road. So I'm just giving you kind of the long-term what's going to happen, but in the short term, this is going to take some time. So does that feel less overwhelming? Do you feel like you have something a little more bite-size?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, good. Other questions or comments, Jason, before we... I want to make sure you're feeling comfortable. I know I moved your cheese today a lot.
Well, that's what we signed up for, right?
Yeah.
No, it's good for now. There's still lots of questions, but I'm going to absorb.
Okay. Yeah. Just take some time. Only focus on those. When we come back next, it's only a week. You don't need to have the conversation with him in a week. It's fine for you to just, and feel free to watch more of module one in general, if you have the time, but for sure video 12 and for sure the managing up, and then we'll go from there.
Will do.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. All right. Susan, how are you? You were more a contributing member today. Did you need anything? Or are you good?
No, I've got the plan for what it could be for an introduction for a new member to the team. And I think that's a really important part to make sure that success and succession is planned out in a way that, cause it will be a challenge in itself. So making sure that goes along where everybody feels that they're a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That they see it as a good thing and not a bomb threat.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Good. Okay. And David, anything else for you that you need to check in on? Or are you good?
Still here. Had a baby wake up. But yeah, this is very helpful. And I believe that like what you're doing right now, Susan, I definitely want to connect with you. Because of all the hiring that we're going to be doing in the spring to kind of just see how things are going for your person and, like that roadmap. Like I had also checked into that bonus module, for the 90 day. And I noticed it was geared towards like the leader entering a new role, but I can see how you can just shift that perspective to reverse engineer for like, how can I really install this program into the new hire? Like how do I utilize the tools that I'm, like you said perfectly, is like all of our peers other people in the company are off doing their jobs while we're having these conversations. Like, how can I become an agent of what of my own learning, and and how do I, I love that beginner's mindset. Is like, the best way to install that in your team is like when we have these technical meetings is, hey, I even with my X years of experience in this, and can, I just realized that, I learned this new thing about our products, or I learned, and that's, it's something you got to display for yourself so that others kind of get in there and say, yeah, you're right, I don't know everything. And clearly the new guy doesn't. So it's a good, I'm interested to hear how you make out with, bringing this person on, because, that's going to be, definitely in my future as well.
So learning is ongoing.
Oh, yeah.
But every single day there's something else going on. And
David, just a comment about onboarding, and I guess this would be true for any of you that are onboarding new people. Onboarding is probably the most critical and powerful culture creation tool you have. You have no easier time to get somebody indoctrinated into your culture than when they first join a company. There's no change management involved.
Yeah.
And so what you want is a consistent process that has one level installed that is above, where are the bathroom, here's your keys, there's your desk, here's the meeting time. You have another level, which is the storytelling level. And so the way you introduce vision and values is through storytelling. And so you say, this is, and you will, those stories. So when you're telling the stories, I want you to be listening for the stories that are the most poignant, that reflect certain values or aspects of your company, because those need to be captured and then recorded and told every time a new member comes on. So whatever you all experience in that room, you need to capture it in some way and repeat a small version of it every time someone joins the company. They need to come through that valve. And then they will feel and experience that, that's why that is. Okay, that's the kind of company we're joining. And so whatever those stories are, that just be on, have an ear to, what are the stories that I'm going to need to tell repeatedly every time I bring someone new into the company? And it may be that as you scale, you simply do a video recording of you telling a story or two about the values, and they are required to watch it. Or it could be that at the higher levels, you meet with them personally and you tell the stories, but you're going to get good at repeating a certain set of stories that lay down that culture for them.
Yeah.
I like that. That's not in any of the training modules. So just wanted to flag that for you, that storytelling is a big part of it. We just used to have these, like abstract values are fine, but when they're linked to stories, people internalize them better.
It's that's great. And I like the idea of doing it at the team level too. Particularly for, we're in the home services business, and it gives the new guys and the new, the new people like that feeling of like they almost like they were there, so that when they are, in the home and they're like, that rapport with the customer is like, they almost feel ingrained with the, as if they were part of the company history, because they know it, like having that awareness of where they came from or where the company came from is great. So I like that.
In my role, my biggest role is I have responsibility for bringing money into the company. So in a corporate world, I would be an investment officer. I'd be out selling why you need to own our shares, why you need to be stock. My owners, my shareholders, our donors who support us and bring money in. So those stories become very important, and they're not necessarily my stories of what's happened here, but they're the stories of your customers and how your business has affected them, and how, how our clients are affected by our services here. Those become the stories, and they truly are the underlying importance of why we exist.
Yeah.
So.
Good. That's good stuff. Jason, I have a question for you. Before I just want to make sure that I'm steering you the right way. Do you have any indicators like that your role could be at risk? you know, like, are you fairly secure in your job? Like in this role, is it hard to displace you?
Yes, if I wanted it to be. Who knows? Loss of faith in leadership can be executed at any point in time for administrative duties, performance duties. They'd be hard pressed to. No one's ever ventured down the road of categorizing performance or quantifying performance or leadership. So,
yeah, they know. You're fine then. I just want to make sure really there wasn't leadership. Anything.
I'm one that. Sorry. No, I'm not worried. I mean, I'm here to do my job, and wherever it goes, I'm not worried about being fired or risking it. So,
okay, good. Because there are some organizations for whom, you know, I've had presidents and leaders who literally, Harpreet, thanks again. Have a good one. I've had leaders who were very accomplished, and they just misstepped in a subtle political thing, and they lost all their credibility, and they were gone, and it made no sense to anybody. But I knew it was there. I just didn't understand it until they had told me. So I just wanted to make sure there wasn't anything there. It sounds like you've got a nice, like in government jobs, people are not at risk of being fired usually. So so I think that's good. As long as you've got a safe job, I know how to guide you now. So you have nothing to worry about. That's good. That's what I wanted to know. So the answer to your original question is, did I break the organization? The answer is absolutely not. It is very recoverable, and you're on the right path. So that's the message I want to give you.
I appreciate it, Shane.
You bet. Well, thank you all so much. Susan, do you have just a minute to chat?
Sure.
Okay. Why don't you stick around?
Thanks, guys. Thanks, have a great week.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.